Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really zeroing in on the core of AWS Cloud Security Fundamentals. This is for you if you're prepping for a cert, or maybe you just need to get up to speed fast on where security lines are drawn in AWS.
That's the plan. We want to give you those key insights, the stuff that lets you actually think like someone responsible for cloud security. So we'll cover the foundational model, then access control, and finally the main tools you'll encounter.
Right. We split it into three parts. First, the big one, the shared responsibility model. Can't do anything without understanding that. Then we'll tackle the gatekeeper IAM, identity and access management. And finally, a look at the security arsenal, the key services that help you stay secure. Okay, let's unpack this. So first things first, the shared responsibility model. This is like the absolute ground truth for cloud security, isn't it?
It really is. It's the concept that divides up who's responsible for what AWS versus you, the customer.
And getting this distinction right is fundamental.
Absolutely. Because AWS is responsible for the security of the cloud.
Meaning the physical buildings, the hardware.
Exactly, the infrastructure itself. But you, the customer, you're responsible for security in the cloud.
Your data, your configurations.
Precisely. And where that line sits? Well, it shifts depending on the specific AWS service you're using. That's where people sometimes get tripped up.
The source material uses that landlord-tenant analogy, which I think helps make it stick. AWS is the landlord.
Yeah, think of it that way. AWS, the landlord, handles the building itself. The physical security for data centers, fences, guards, biometric access. You, as a customer, you can't just walk into an AWS data center, right? They own that whole security chain.
Makes sense.
And they manage patching the underlying hardware, the host OS, the virtualization layer, the core stuff the cloud runs on.
Okay, so if AWS handles the building and the foundation, what am I, the tenant, responsible for inside my apartment?
Great question. Universally, you always own the security of your customer data.
So encrypting it, classifying it.
Right. And you always own identity and access management, IAM. Who gets the keys, essentially?
But you said the line shifts.
It does. Take EC2, launching a virtual machine. Oh, yeah. With EC2, you control the operating system running inside that virtual machine.
Ah, so I have to patch the guest OS, install updates, handle security settings on Windows or Linux running on my EC2 instance.
Exactly. You're responsible for that layer. But if you use a service like, say, Amazon S3 for storage or AWS Lambda for serverless functions, AWS manages much more of the underlying stack. You don't patch the S3 operating system, for example. AWS handles that.
Got it. So physical security, core infrastructure, AWS. User access, data, configuring the resources I deploy that's on me.
And that configuration part includes things like setting up your virtual firewalls.
Like security groups and NACLs.
Yep. Network access control lists. You configure those. Plus ensuring you're using encryption properly, like TLS SSL for network traffic. If we connect this to the bigger picture, understanding this division of labor is crucial. It tells you where to focus your security efforts.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And since managing access is our job, that leads us straight into the main tool for that, AWS Identity and Access Management, or IAM. You mentioned it's the gatekeeper. It's global, it's free, and honestly, probably the most critical piece for the customer side of security. Here's where it gets really interesting.
It absolutely is. IAM is how you enforce security in the cloud, and the core idea behind it is the principle of least privilege.
Meaning?
Meaning any user, or any application for that matter, should only have the minimum set of permissions needed to do its specific job. No more.
Like the hotel key card analogy you sometimes hear, right? The cleaner's key only opens certain rooms, the manager's key opens more, but nobody gets a key that opens everything unless absolutely necessary.
Precisely. You define those exact permissions in IAM. And it uses four main building blocks to do that.
Okay, let's break those down. First up, users.
Right. These are the entities, could be people or applications, that need credentials, passwords, or access keys to interact with AWS.
And the big one here is the root user, the account owner identity created when you first sign up.
Yes, and this is super important. The root user has total unrestricted access. It can do literally anything, including deleting the entire account.
So the best practice is
lock it away. Secure it immediately with multi-factor authentication, MFA, and then don't use it for everyday tasks. Create separate IAM users, even for administrators.
Why is that so critical?
Because if a regular IAM admin account gets compromised, the damage is usually limited by its permissions. But if the root account gets compromised, game over. They could lock you out, delete everything. It's the ultimate key.
Okay, lock away the root user. Got it. What's next? after users.
Groups. These are just collections of IAM users. Makes managing permissions way easier.
So instead of giving permissions to five developers one by one, you put them in a developers group and apply the permissions to the group.
Exactly. Simple, but effective. Then you have policies.
These are the actual permission documents, right? Written in JSON.
Correct. Policies explicitly define what actions are allowed or denied on which AWS resources. Like EC2 start instances on specific instance IDs, or S3 get object for a certain bucket.
And AWS provides some pre-built ones, but you can write your own custom policies too.
You can. And a key thing to remember about policies, IAM defaults to deny. If something isn't explicitly allowed, it's blocked.
But an explicit deny always wins, right? Even over an allow.
Always. One explicit deny in any applicable policy overrides any number of allows. That's a common troubleshooting point.
Okay, users, groups, policies. What's the fourth component?
Roles. And these are really powerful and kind of represent a more modern approach. Roles are identities that are assumable.
Assumable, meaning not tied to one specific person or application long term.
Exactly. They're designed for temporary access. Think about an EC2 instance needing to read data from an S3 bucket.
Okay.
Instead of embedding long-term secret keys onto that EC2 instance, which is risky.
Right. Keys can leak.
The EC2 instance can assume an IAM role that has permission to access S3. It gets temporary, short-lived credentials, uses them, and then they expire.
That's much cleaner. Avoids the whole problem of managing and rotating static keys.
It's a huge security improvement. Roles are used everywhere for cross-account access, for AWS services acting on your behalf, for federated users. Very flexible.
And you mentioned MFA, multi-factor authentication, earlier with the root user. That's critical for IAM generally.
Absolutely essential. Something you know, password, plus something you have, like a code from an app or a physical key. Should be mandatory for root, all admins, and ideally many other users too. It adds a massive layer of protection against compromised credentials.
Okay, so we have the shared responsibility model dividing the work, and IAM is our tool to manage our side, focusing on least privilege. But rules need enforcement and monitoring. That takes us to the third part. The security arsenal, the actual services that help protect things, we don't need to be experts in configuring all of them right now, but we do need to know what problems they solve.
Exactly. Let's group them by function. First, protecting your network and applications, the sort of virtual bouncers.
Like AWS Shield.
Right. Shield is your managed protection against DDoS attacks, distributed denial of service, tries to overwhelm your resources with traffic. There's Shield Standard, which is free and automatic, protecting against common network-level attacks.
And Shield Advanced.
That's a paid service. Offers more sophisticated detection, handles larger attacks, and importantly, gives you access to the AWS DDoS response team, actual humans who help you during an attack.
Okay, Shield handles the flood of traffic. What about attacks hidden within the traffic, like web exploits?
That's where AWS WAFF comes in the web application firewall. It operates at layer 7, the application layer.
So it looks for things like SQL injection or cross-site scripting XSS attacks, trying to mess with my web application.
Precisely. You use WAF with services like CloudFront, AWS CDN, application load balancers, or API gateway to filter that malicious web traffic before it hits your application. They often work together. Shield blocks the volume. WAF inspects the content.
Got it. What about the more fundamental firewalls? So you mentioned security groups and NACLs earlier.
Right. Those are the core virtual firewalls. Key differences. Security groups, SGs, act at the instance level. Think of it as a firewall around your virtual server.
And they're stateful, right?
Yes, stateful. That means if you allow incoming traffic, say web traffic on port 80, the return traffic going back out is automatically allowed. You don't need a separate outbound rule for the response. SGs only support allow rules.
Okay, simpler. And NACLs, network access control lists.
NACLs operate at the subnet level, a boundary around multiple instances. They are stateless.
Stateless, meaning if I allow traffic in, I also have to explicitly create a rule to allow the response traffic back out.
Correct. Much more granular, but also more complex to manage. The big difference, though, is that NACLs support both allow and deny rules.
So with an NACL, I could explicitly block traffic from a known bad IP address range, which I can't do directly with the security group.
Exactly. NACLs give you that explicit deny capability at the subnet border, and their rules are processed in numerical order. It's a trade-off. More control, but more configuration overhead.
Okay, that covers the bouncers. Now, what about detecting threats inside our environment? The intelligent guards.
Top of the list there is Amazon GuardDuty. Think of this as your intelligent threat detection service. It continuously monitors logs like VPC flow logs, CloudTrail, DNS logs, and uses machine learning and threat intelligence to identify malicious or unauthorized activity.
Like what, for example?
Like an EC2 instance suddenly communicating with a known crypto mining command and control server, or unusual API calls suggesting compromised credentials. GuardDuty finds active threats happening now.
So it's reactive in a sense. It sees bad things happening. What about being proactive, finding vulnerabilities before they're exploited?
That's Amazon Inspector. Inspector is an automated vulnerability management service. It scans your workloads, EC2 instances, container images looking for known software vulnerabilities, CVEs, and also checks for unintended network exposure.
So, GuardDuty spots the intruder trying the door, while Inspector checks if you left a window unlocked.
That's a pretty good analogy, yeah. Inspector helps you find and patch those unlocked windows proactively.
And there's a service to pull all these findings together. It can get overwhelming with alerts from different places.
That's AWS Security Hub. It's designed to be that single pane of glass. It aggregates security findings from GuardDuty, Inspector, Amazon Macie, partner tools, and correlates them, prioritizes them based on severity, and checks against security standards like CIS benchmarks. Helps you focus on the most critical issues first.
Okay, network protection, threat detection. What about protecting the data itself, especially encryption keys?
Key management is critical. The main service here is AWS Key Management Service, KMS.
KMS, I've seen that everywhere.
It makes it relatively easy to create and control cryptographic keys used to encrypt your data. It's integrated with tons of other AWS services. With KMS, AWS manages the underlying hardware security modules, HSMs, that protect the keys, but you control who can use the keys and how via IAM policies. It's a shared management model for the keys.
But what if I have super strict compliance needs? Like I need exclusive control over the hardware generating the keys.
For those cases, there's AWS Cloud HSM. This provides you with dedicated single-tenant hardware security modules in the AWS cloud.
Single-tenant meaning only I can use that physical device.
Correct. You have much more direct control. You manage the keys entirely within the HSM. But it comes with significantly more operational responsibility and cost compared to KMS. You typically only use cloud HSM if a specific compliance mandate requires it, like certain FIPS 142 Level 3 requirements.
So KMS for most use cases, cloud HSM for specific high compliance needs. Makes sense. And what about finding sensitive data, like credit card numbers accidentally stored somewhere?
That's Amazon Macie. Macie uses machine learning and pattern matching to scan your data in Amazon S3.
So it automatically discovers and helps classify sensitive data like PII, personally identifiable information, or financial data.
Exactly. Helps you understand where your sensitive data resides in S3, which is crucial for data privacy and compliance.
Speaking of compliance, how do I get proof that AWS itself meets standards like ISO 27001 or SOC2?
For that, you go to AWS Artifact. It's basically a self-service portal where you can download AWS's compliance reports on demand. These are reports from third-party auditors verifying AWS's controls.
Okay, Artifact gives me AWS's report card. What about getting advice on my environment's security posture?
That's where AWS Trusted Advisor comes in. Think of it as your automated cloud best practices engine. It inspects your AWS environment across several categories, including security. It'll flag things like, oh, MFA missing on the root account, or S3 buckets allowing public access, or security groups with overly permissive rules. It gives you concrete recommendations.
So it's like having a consultant constantly checking for common security misconfigurations.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a really valuable tool, especially the security checks.
Wow, okay. That was a whirlwind tour of the main security services. Let's try and boil this down. What are the absolute key takeaways?
If you remember just two things, make it these. First, deeply understand the shared responsibility model. Know what's AWS's job, security of the cloud, and what's your job, security in the cloud. That line is everything. Second, live and breathe the principle of least privilege. Use IAM meticulously, users, groups, roles, policies to grant only the minimum necessary permissions and enforce it with MFA wherever possible, especially for critical accounts.
Right. Master the distinction, implement least privilege. And for the services, maybe just knowing their primary function is the key first step. Like Shield stops DDoS floods, WAF stops web attacks like SQL injection, GuardDuty detects active threats, Inspector finds vulnerabilities before they're exploited, and KMS manages your encryption keys.
Exactly. Knowing what problem each service solves is the foundational knowledge you need, And thinking about how this all evolves, the source material stresses security is continuous. So here's something to chew on. We talked about IAM roles and temporary credentials replacing static keys. How does this ability to grant access just in time, maybe even programmatically for very short durations, fundamentally change how we should think about security compared to the old world of long-lived passwords and keys? That shift away from static, long-term trust to temporary scoped access, that's a really profound change the cloud enables.
That's a great point. Moving away from static vulnerabilities. So what does this all mean for you listening? You should now have that solid foundation, those critical insights, to feel much more confident navigating AWS security. Thanks for diving deep with us.